On the Druidcraft Tarot, there are images of standing stones. They're just everywhere on the cards. And of course, the stones are all over the UK. You can find them as single stones, small clusters, and of course, the big ones. And Scotland has some dramatic examples. The Ring of Brodgar on Orkney, the Callnish stones on the island of Lewis, and they date back 4 to 5,000 years. So the $64 question is, why were they built and what's their connection with the Druids?
Ah, well, of course, Linda, it's not a $64 question. It's a $64,000
Oh,
question.
sorry, right.
Yes,
I'm not offering much of a reward for the answer, am I?
but what the connection with the Druids is this. We love to put things in boxes in order to understand things. But of course, life, we all know that life isn't like that. Life is much more like a river than a series of display cases in a museum. And so the stone circles were pre-Druidic. They're like the great kind of roots of a tree. They're very early, these primal examples of humanity's relationship with the land and the sky and with the earth and with the stars. One of the amazing things about them, if you think about it, these stone circles and these standing stones, they're aligned with the planets and the movements of the celestial bodies, yet they are great chunks of stone that are connected to the earth. So they bring heaven and earth together. Now, at a certain time, and we don't know when, but if you can imagine this line of knowledge and wisdom and magical practice taking place over thousands of years. And gradually, there are all sorts of changes, historical changes and cultural changes and so on, as you move from the Neolithic into the Bronze Age and so on. But at some point, we get the kind of druids that we know, that we recognize from the classical authors. And nothing begins without a connection to its past. And so we can think of the stone circles and these single standing stones as pre-Druidic or even proto-Druidic. And proto-Druidic in the sense that they stand just at the beginning of this phase of Druidry. So that's the connection we believe in or we sense. And there's a movement, if you think about the way Druids worshipped and celebrated in sacred groves. So there, instead of there being rings of stone, there are rings of trees, if you like, with clearings in them, and they're the druids worshipping there. And but they almost certainly would have worshipped in stone circles as well. So that's why we've brought them into the Druidcraft Tarot. They reflect A, our ancestry and heritage, and B, one of the main focuses of Druidry, which is working with this link between the stars and sky and the earth itself.
And so, working with those links between the stars and the earth and the moon and all of those alignments, is that really connected with agriculture partly, or is it something else?
Well, you see, what they mark really is the transition from the hunter-gatherer nomadic society to being settled. Once the stone circle started to be built, this was indicative of tribes who were settling down and forming a relationship with a particular spot on the earth, and so they built sacred complexes, ritual landscapes, as you see in Orkney, for instance, and as you see down in the south of England, west of England, southwest of England, with Avebury and Stonehenge, and some of these great landscapes. And once you settle in a place and stay put, you become sensitive to and dependent on the cycles of the seasons. And so then the solstices and the equinox of these various markers become important to you from the point of view of agriculture, as you said, and from the point of view of livestock rearing as well.
Let's go to Orkney and the Ring of Brodgar. The first time I went there, I had the most amazing experience. I was just, in the group, we're just walking up to the stones, and we're starting to walk around them, and I had this overwhelming sense of being pushed back. I just felt this force pushing me back, and so I didn't want to walk around these stones, and the others were off walking away in front of me, and I was just standing there, and I was just like, and I was my heart was palpitating, and I was like frightened, and then I started to have a vision of being blindfolded and being dragged around the circle. Oh, I mean, what do you think might have been going on that I would have had that sort of feeling?
Well, you know what's so interesting, and it's going to be wonderful going there in July to see this with everyone, is that you have, if you can imagine, a line with three points on it, and on the right-hand side, you've got the stones of Stennis, these wonderful, almost sort of razor-thin stones, similar, reminiscent of Callanish in a way, standing up there. And then move to the point in the centre of this line, and you've got what's called the Ness of Brodgar, which stands between the saltwater sea and I've forgotten the word for water that doesn't have salt in it. Clear water,
Clear water,
loch,
fresh water, fresh water.
freshwater loch. That's it, freshwater loch. So you've got these two worlds, as it were, and there's this thin strip of land with a Ness of Brodgar, which they're excavating now, and we'll be able to see those excavations because they're taking place in the summer this year. And then over on the left, the Ring of Brodgar, which is this stone circle, huge stone circle, almost as big as Avebury, that had 60 stones. There are 27 of them left at the moment. With heather all around them, very beautiful. And so you imagine these three points, and as they uncover the Ness of Brodgar, they've only excavated about 10% of it so far, but nevertheless, that 10% is an enormous amount of material and size that they've dug up. And what they're starting to believe now is that this was clearly a ritual site. At first, they thought they'd found a village, Stone Age village, but no, it seems that it was a temple complex within this larger ritual landscape complex, which has Maze Howe, the tumulus, a bit oriented to the winter solstice, like Newgrange, a bit further over to the east, northeast. And that here was a place where the mysteries of life and death were honoured. And you see these very interesting, strange, unusually shaped buildings, great thick walls with fire pits set in the middle, doorways, places where you would have two ways to go. So the suggestion is that people would come in to commune with the ancestors. So that one of the theories that seems to hold a lot of water is that the stones of Stennis over on the eastern side was the circle you would celebrate the living, as it were, and where the living would be honored and so on. And then you would move to the Ness of Brodgar, this temple complex with these huge thick stone walls around it, so you couldn't see inside. And then you'd go in through the entrance and be taken through as a kind of initiation, as an initiation, through these various labyrinthine pathways with fires burning and with choices of ways. And of course, that wonderful card in the tarot, the Two of Swords, where you have the choice of two ways. And that's so symbolic of life, isn't it? You can almost look back on your life and think of the moments when you
Oh,
had
yes.
choice. Do I take the job or do I not take the job? Do I marry him or don't I marry him? And so on. And then the whole sequence of consequences that flow from the particular choice you've made. And so the suggestion is, or the idea is that the one, the candidate would have been led through these various tests and trials and so on, until you arrive at the end of the complex, and then You walk out, and there is the Ring of Brodgar ahead of you. And
Wow.
perhaps it's there, that the rites of the dead and the encounters with the ancestors took place in the depths. And obviously, that was an extremely powerful place. And you can imagine it was such a big circle. And there were
Yes.
lots of people there. I think the other thing to remember about it, it's very easy for us to look at Orkney and think of it as a far-flung outpost of civilization. And we make the trek all the way up there. And what we have to do is turn things around completely, imagining the weather to be far better. Imagine it almost a Mediterranean climate. And you've got those lovely white, almost Caribbean beaches with turquoise sea that you
Yes, you
see
do.
Western Islands and around Calanish and up in Orkney as well. Now imagine the fabulous weather there as well. And lots of people. So this is the centre. And the suggestion now is that these places were built 500 years before Stonehenge and Avebury. And so what prehistorians are now saying is turn everything on its head. Imagine that that's the centre of a Neolithic culture. That's the magical spiritual centre. This is the Rome of indigenous spirituality in these islands. And it starts there, and then it slowly percolates south. So that, half a millennium later, Stonehenge and Avebury and that whole ritual complex is built down in the south. So now that changes everything. So now when we go up there in July, we will be making a pilgrimage, not to an outpost, but to the centre. We'll be going back to the centre.
You actually get that feeling, particularly once you start to look at Skara Brae, because you only need to read the information in the centre or in the notes or talk to guides or whatever, and you realise that what you just said about the climate, that it was actually very mild, which is people find it difficult to think that you've got a mild climate that far north in Scotland. But you're right about the beaches around Skara Brae. I mean, I just stand there, and as an Australian, I'm looking at an Australian surf beach. I mean, it's
Absolutely. It's
extraordinary.
like that on Iona as well.
Yes, it is. It is, and so there is that sense of this was a thriving community, particularly and I'm sure that now that they're finding out more about the Ness of Brodgar, that it's just building up that picture, as you say, of it being a thriving
A
hub.
thriving place. I mean, they found, for instance, they found that at a certain time, 600 cattle were slaughtered at around the same time,
I see.
for a huge feast and sort of ritual. And that's a vast amount of cattle. And the other thing we have to think of as well is, the way it's surrounded by sea. And again, for us who are so car oriented, if you've got little islands, you think that they're inaccessible. But everybody's zipping around in boats. And it was actually really busy. So it changes our view of it completely. So and the place like the Ring of Brodgar, this 60, the amount of energy and effort that went to make it physically. Think of the amount of magical effort that went into that too. The amount of circles that were cast, if you like, or the amount of magic that went into the placement of each of those stones. So it's no surprise that people who are sensitive, like yourself, Linda, would have powerful experiences when they go there.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting what you say about it being a place for rituals for the dead, because I mean that would probably account for my sense of fear, and dread or something that I was having. By the time I'd finished walking around, I was fine. I calmed down. But it took me completely by surprise.
And I think it illustrates as well how we do have to be sensitive about how we approach these places. It's very, the way tourist buses arrive at these sacred sites. Everybody piles out and thunders into them and then takes a few snaps and goes out again. But whereas for those of us who are working in this field, if you like, we approach it in a different way with a certain sensitivity and respect and caution, and so that we don't either disturb ourselves or the site itself and the beings and spirits that live there.
Yes, talking of places being disturbed, I mean one of the cute things about May's Howe, you realise the sort of continuity of cultures and things that have happened over the millennia, and of course the Vikings arriving in that part of the world, and the Scandinavian influence is very noticeable. On the islands, they're all very proud of their Viking heritage, but May's Howe, of course, has got all these runic scripts all written all over it. And initially, people thought, "Oh, this is all very, sacred, all this runic script." But in fact, it was just graffiti.
Well, it's lovely, isn't it? I've read one of the translations of that, straight out of Lord of the Rings. I, the finest rune master, carved this with the axe of
whatever, and.
whatever. Yes, wonderful stuff.
And also stuff that is truly graffiti, so and so some woman has big tits, stuff like this. I mean,
Really?
it's and so you suddenly go, oh, there were some real people. So they say they were going along,
Exactly.
and the roof collapsed, and so they say 100 Vikings landed stuck in the cairn, I couldn't get out, and so they started to scribble and and write
Absolutely.
graffiti.
Yes, indeed.
But that too, putting aside that, which is just a wonderful anecdote, but also just giving us a sense of history and what has happened to these sites over the years, over the centuries, is that. That too is a very special place because it's you sort of go in and there's this and there's these beautifully preserved chambers and so on, and it's just again, I remember on the first time I went there, we after we'd been in there, we went back to the place that where we were staying, and did a little a guided meditation, just imagining we were inside May's Howe and going into the various chambered areas of it. So just in terms of burial, what do we know about the rituals? Is it cremation? Is it what?
We know very little, but I think what seems to be interesting is the way that and this is where you see this wonderful chain of continuity. The way, for instance, you go to a church and you're sitting in the church and you're thinking, or you may have thought, it's a bit odd, isn't it? There are people buried underneath me, because you look on the floor and there's a sort of slab with somebody's name on it when they died. And you think, this is a bit odd.
Yes,
And
that's
then, people are being married or babies are being christened,
right.
and there are gravestones outside. And of course, it's not odd at all. It's actually it's absolutely appropriate, because the mystery of life, the fact that the beauty of a baby who's born into this world immediately means also that it will die, and that there's a cycle, is all there, the mystery of life and death and so on. So of course it's completely natural. And so in the and then you discover that in the Roman Catholic tradition, every altar has a little compartment in it with a bone. And there's an office in the Vatican called, got a wonderful title. I also imagine the sort of the sign on the door of this office in the Vatican, and it's called, oh God, what is it? Oh yes, the Office of the Genealogy of the Bones.
Really?
And that's where they will record, every church, every altar, that and every bone that's hidden, the knee bone of Saint so and so, or whatever.
Wow.
So, and again, you think, God, this seems rather odd to have a bone in an altar, But of course, and it takes you right back to precisely somewhere like May's Howe, or West Kennet Long Barrow, where the places where the bones were kept were almost certainly the places where the rituals were enacted as well, and where the living also went. So it wasn't just a house for the dead, where the bodies were popped in and then it was sealed up. It was actually there, and there were some form of rites of communion where the living and the dead would meet, as it were. And then when you learn that in Catholic countries again, the body is exhumed sometimes of saints, for instance, exhumed after they believe the flesh has sort of gone, as it were, and they will get the bones, so the bones can then be used as can be taken out and used as relics. And again, you can think, God, that's a bit ghoulish, isn't it? But you see, say, if you look in New Zealand and Maori culture, where the bodies were, where the flesh was taken off the bone at a certain time after it decayed a certain amount, it was taken off the bone, and the bones were specially, were then buried in caves and so on. So you see this around the world, this basic primal reverence for bones. Like it's almost as if we're saying, we know the flesh is transient. You know, the flesh represents the transience of life, but the bones represent, you know, the eternity of life because they last forever. And so it's a deeply symbolic as this is the part, you know, this is the part of me that will remain forever. So there's an interesting correlation between the soul, the eternal part of the self, and the bones.
Oh, yeah,
And
right.
so, for instance, up on, I've forgotten which of the islands, because there are about 20 islands, aren't there, that are inhabited in Orkney. But I think Westray, or perhaps Rousay, I can't, or Ronaldsay, I can't remember, which there's the Temple of the Eagles, where six, I think the remains of 600 people were actually found.
That's right.
So to begin with, you can say, you know, isn't it a bit inappropriate for us as visitors to go into these places, because these are the places of the dead, and it's desecrating these places, and you know, we shouldn't go there. But if you look at it in this way, that these were places that were used by the living to commune with the ancestors, then I think it's fair to say, well, if we go with respect in our hearts and love in our hearts, with a sincere desire to commune with the ancestors and to pay our respects, then we're then I think we can do that. And I was interested that you had the meditation afterwards, because I think that's one of the values of pilgrimage and actually physically visiting these places. Because you can say, you know, well, why actually go when actually you can go onto YouTube now, watch little films about it. You can do this wonderful 360 degree panorama photos, can't you? And if you've got a big screen, you know, I've got one of those big computer screens here. And you know, I mean, it's like you're there. It's extraordinary, you know, beautiful high definition images and so on. But there's something about actually physically going to the place. And I think if we take a magical understanding where everything is vibration, and you know, however much you and I can see each other on Skype, for instance, when we talk, there's something about, you know, when we met up, I remember when we, you know, when we met in Australia, you know, there you are, your vibrations are available to me, if I a mind to
Don't know
you
if
from
that's
six.
a good thing or a bad thing, but
Yes, who knows? Yes, that's right. But we're you know, nothing beats that. Nothing
No,
beats that.
that's true.
And that's, I think, you know, for instance, that's why I'm making the effort, because it's easy for me to think, oh gosh, do I have to flog all the way up there? And you know, I can see it perfectly well on my screen. But I know that by actually physically going there, I will have touched something, which is why they put the bone in the altar. Because if you said to, you know, if you said to a Catholic priest, you know, why, or you went to the office of the genealogy of the bones, and you said, look, this is terribly, why on earth are you bothering about bones? Somebody who's dead, long and gone, in an altar. This, you know, in a sense, the only sensible way of replying to that is in a very sort of occult or esoteric or magical way to say, well, we believe that these bones have a vibration, they transmit something. There's a resonance there, and that it, coming into contact with that, sitting in that church, there's this little secret compartment in the altar that's going beep, 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 you know, and somehow influencing you.
Look, I think I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I just know from being there. I mean, you can look at, I can tell you now, you can look at any number of beautiful 3D images of the sunsets on Orkney, but it doesn't beat being there. And similarly with that experience, like, I mean, I could watch, you know, a heap of stuff about the Ring of Brodgar, but I would never experience what I experienced. And that's why we go on these pilgrimages. So I am really looking forward to sharing time with you there, Philip. You and Stephanie, it will be just fantastic.
Yes, I'm so looking forward to it too. We both are.